the first monthly meeting of the Board of Port Townsend to order. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, everyone has a copy of the agenda. Would like to, is there any additions or corrections that anyone needs to make to the agenda right now?
I just have one question on the executive session about how long and will it be in?
No decision. 15 minutes.
Okay. So I move that we approve the agenda.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the consent agenda. Has everyone seen the consent agenda?
Yes.
And is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving right along. Public comments not related to the agenda. Go ahead. Now, just to temper your expectations, these are comments. We won't be replying or answering or debating any comments. You have a reasonable amount of time to make comments, and then we'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. I want to make a comment about the, try to make a metaphor. I'm sure everybody's familiar with my situation by now. Is that, do I need to elaborate on that? Or?
Nope.
Okay. All right. You know, I try to think of a metaphor about rules, why they're enforced. And I think the simplest one I think everybody can relate to are the roads. You know, why do we have rules on the roads? Why do we have to stop at stop signs? Why are we not supposed to drink and drive? I mean, what happens when they're not enforced? If those rules, you know, the rules are made for safety and to protect private property, what happens when those rules aren't enforced? They're not abided by. Nobody follows them. And then what happens? You know? So anyway, I'm trying to make the metaphor that there were certain rules in the yard and they've never enforced. So what happens when they're not enforced? That's my comment.
Thank you. Okay, any other comments not related to the agenda? Okay, then we'll plow right ahead into the agenda. The first one we're going to dig as a second reading, which is action items, and the first item on the second reading is the parking policy.
Fresh off the press, Eric just delivered this to me about 3 minutes ago. I'm still reading it myself. And we did mention it this morning during the workshop, staff feels that better control the parking situation. We don't think a lot needs to be done, but because we are experiencing some of these vehicles that tend to just be here all the time, we've got a number of them kind of cleaned up that are in the process of being removed. But we feel we need to have at least a 72-hour limit on parking in one place. This is very similar to what the Park and Ride has over by Safeway, the transit runs. So Eric just put this together since the workshop. And one of the things I wanted to make sure was, you know, if a boater you know, is off cruising the San Juans for 2 weeks, it's okay if they leave their car here. They'll need to go over to the morgue office and say, look, I'll be back 2 weeks from Thursday, and we'll give a little chit to put on your dashboard so that when staff goes around, they'll know that one's okay. But everybody else, so your buddy Steve that parks over here and then catches the bus to SeaTac for a month would not be able to do that anymore. So my intent is to implement this. Part of our rules and regs on parking.
So what's it take to get a permit? I mean, what's, is there a cost or?
No, it's no cost. Yeah, just go to the morgue office and say, I'll be gone for a few weeks and we'll give you.
But it's only for tenants. I mean, a citizen can come in and get a parking pass for a month, but any tenant could come in to the morgue office, request that.
Okay, so what about for patrons that are, got their boat hauled out and, you know, they're parking their vehicle over in that area, that's, and this is something that would be.
If their boat is here, I would say they can stay here.
Okay.
I think it looks good.
But even like one of the cases, the vehicle finally got moved. So, you know, one of our liveaboards, you know, had a car parked, for a very long time in one place. But we want those cars moved. That way we know it's active. In that case, the license had to even expired. They're okay now. But, and we'll see if it doesn't, we encounter any issues or problems in executing it, we can always, you know, change it and modify it.
So are there any cars out there that don't have current tabs that are, that belong to people like liveaboards? What about those? I mean, it says in here that.
That's already.
That's already a rule.
Right.
Tag them and tow them. Yeah. And we have towed people that have abandoned their cars here.
Right. What I'm getting at is, don't we have some now that are out there that don't have current tabs that belong to people?
Well, we had this one, but after we tagged it, given the warning,
okay,
they finally got it up to, you know, new tags. So.
So the D part, I mean, that's kind of redundant with the towing company. Northwest Towing isn't going to release anything until it's been paid.
Yeah, I was gonna, I had a friendly suggestion for D to just add at the end of the first line where it says may be towed and impounded, just to add at owner's expense, because you have at owner's expense in other areas, just to clarify. And then shall be released only after all charges and costs have been paid by the owner.
And we have that in other parts of our rules for the towing. So.
Okay. All right. That's really all I have.
Okay, so then we can go on to the Bob and Mary Cunningham. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
One comment. Last week we had a big discussion about the dive shop. We're still taking three spaces. They're putting their clothes rack on one, putting no parking for delivery on the other, and putting red cones on the other. It was an issue this weekend when there was no parking for the cars. So that needs to be enforced.
Let's see, I think last week we talked about all the ones in front of, I remember mentioning that the dive shop did that, but in, along with a lot of other things too. So did anyone ever talk to the dive shop?
I did not talk to them. I talked to Mr. Heckman, who is the owner of the guy that leases to the dive shop, and I'm hoping he does something about it. But if he does,
we'll take care of it.
Well, he has to.
Yeah, we'll take care of it.
Okay, any other comments on parking? Okay, to the Bob and Mary Cunningham lease.
Well, as you remember, Bob and Mary came in and did their presentation last meeting about their visions for the J&S fabrication building. Since then, we've put a copy of the lease in Dropbox for you all. Commissioner Tucker came in this morning with some concerns, and I agree with his concerns. Kind of stemming around, we are giving some rent concessions to Bob and Mary in order to do some capital improvements to the building. So what we've done is I worked with Bob this morning and putting together a tenant improvement agreement so that we're all on the same page of what Bob and Mary are going to do with regards to some rent abatement. So these are normal tenant improvements, but if you've ever been in the front half of the J&S building, it's all offices. It was done for Market Tech when they were here. It's been very difficult to rent those offices to Maureen Trades because they don't need those kind of spaces. We had on our list to do some work in there for maintenance to go in and actually reconfigure that building. Since then, Bob and Mary have come to us and said they will do all this. They'll do all the permitting and everything if we'll abate rent for a certain period of time. So you notice in the lease, we've abated over a four-year period about $12,000 in rent. So the market rate is $1,000 a month for that building. First 2 years, they'll pay $700. Second 2 years, $800. and then the fifth year there'll be market rate. We didn't put 1,000 in there because we don't know what the market rate's going to be 4 years from now. So this just kind of memorializes what they're going to do. They're in the process of drafting some plans. They will bring the plans back to you so you can concur with what they're doing. But basically, they're just opening it up so they can build boats. It's a clear span building, so there's no structural issues. The building is fine.
So then this will be included in the lease so that someone doesn't have to go in and look at a different separate place to find this? And then the plans that they're going to bring to us, are they going to also be included? And the reason I'm bringing that up is that this is good, but it's still, it just says remove all load, non-load bearing partition walls. Well, you know, you could look at that and say, well, they left one here, or this one is not load bearing, or this one is, you know, in other words, there's some vagaries in here, some items. And I don't want to have the situation occur like we did with Pete. I'd like to have, in other words, the plans that you suggested with everything spelled out so that we'll know precisely if they're on schedule and if they're keeping up their end and so on. So that'll be also included with this.
Well, it'll be included as soon as we have them. Obviously, there's a city building process that they're going to have to go through, getting city permits, state permits for electrical. So when that gets done, but we have to remember they're configuring this for their business. So they're not configuring to our specifications to theirs. So we'll work with them all we can, but we're hoping this is a long-term relationship and the building will work for them. But there is, it's a whole city process that they're going to have to go through as far as code.
Normally, you know, we don't, the commission doesn't, you know, approve these sorts of plans. When somebody's building a new building, you know, part of the process, they'll bring back to the commission the architectural drawings, you know, the paint scheme, so we know how it's going to fit in, you know, wherever the facility is. You know, normally with this, we just want to make sure they follow all the local rules and, you know, getting the proper permits and design. But,
you know, yeah. Frankly, as a commissioner, I don't really care. You know, I mean, as long as it works right. But what I want to avoid is what happened with Pete and the Coppola house. In other words, I want to have our expectations precisely wedded to their expectations so that we don't end up each thinking differently when the dust is all settled and have a problem, because that was really unfortunate, I think. And so I just want to make sure, and if these plans would be a vehicle to do that, I think would be a really good way to make sure that it's accomplished.
Is it possible on paragraph 8 of the premises, of the lease, it says acceptance of premises, and following on the commissioner's thought, maybe to add and as provided in the tenant improvement agreement as
sure.
attached. Also in 10 of the lease, it talks about alterations and improvements, and it lays out the process that the executive director has to approve it. And then it says such written approval shall also include agreement for the disposition of the improvements upon them leaving. So we probably just need to clarify in here that it's the court, that any improvements are the court's property.
Okay. You know, I would think that number 10 would have to be
choose. We don't want
to. Yeah, or it's your option. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think number 10 would have to be completely rewritten because it says right in the first sentence, it shall make no alterations or improvements.
Without first obtaining written approval from the executive director, so the executive signing this would be that in.
Okay.
That's a standard paragraph.
So then we can go ahead and we don't want to let this go on for
right.
So we want to approve this today with the
based on the changes that we
just discussed.
Okay. So I make a motion then that we approve this lease with the changes that we just discussed. Wait a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Commissioners, did you want a formal vote on your parking policy?
Well, see, we discussed that. We had a good discussion there. Eric presented on policy versus operations.
Okay.
And in my delegation of authority, they already had given that authority to me to modify the rules and regs as I see fit to on the port, but that I would report it to the commission in a timely fashion. So.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're moving on to the first reading, discussion only items, which were actually include some things that after we look at it critically, it might end up being just information-only items in our next iteration of how our meeting policy goes along. But the first reading is the Point Hudson duplex painting contract.
And this is one of the ones we also talked about this morning, the type of thing where it's in our maintenance budget. We planned, you know, last year that this year we would paint the duplex. You know, the previous year, I think it was the same company when the contract then did the sail lock building. So this is kind of one of those things that I would say, you know, we really don't need a second reading on. It's for you now because it's $1,900 above my spending limit. But there's really nothing more to say about this. It's a contractor made the bid. It's a good bid. They're a good company, and they're ready to start. So as soon as we can give them the thumbs up, then they can, you know, they can order the paint and all the typical things. So, if you want to wait, you can, or you can just move this to immediate action.
Well, I think based on what the clarification we got from Eric this morning as to what our present thing says, I think that based on that, it would seem to me that we could go ahead and do this, because it's really not a policy change. It's just a
dime. You're fine with me. I'm just always so surprised why we don't have local contractors that can compete and be interested in doing this work.
Me too. So
that's open to all on a fair and equal basis. A lot of them don't want to deal with the prevailing wage and all the paperwork. And it's,
a lot of them couldn't meet the schedule.
And that's the only with, you know, this time of year with painting, everybody's painting right now because of the weather. So it's, everybody's got an equal chance to bid.
Yeah, we had a painter over at dinner the other night, and I mentioned this project. And he said, oh, yeah, no way.
No way.
Scheduling.
No.
Flat out.
Well, with that in mind, then, do we want to make a motion to go ahead and approve that painting contract?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, well, I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Yoo-hoo! Okay, the June 2014 financials.
Amy.
You all have the June financial statements in front of you. At this point, the total gross operating revenues are $2.4 million, which is about $170,000 over where we were at last year. Right now, we're 50% through the year, and our revenues are at 50.57% of what we've projected for the year. So we're right on line, especially keeping in mind that our busy season is really just starting in, you know, July, August. So all of the departments are showing an increase over the prior year, with the exception of Quilting, which is down. And you can see that even in the fuel sales, everything's just down out in Quilting.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Our fuel sales, they were primarily to commercial interests out there, weren't they? So those commercial interests started curtailing or something?
It's got to be a little bit of everything. I mean, we do, you know, to the commercial out there as well as to individuals. And
our biggest customer was Sandy Owen. He's got a big power bank.
He got more than the commercial guys?
He was our biggest single customer.
Oh, okay.
He's not in the boating industry. So that's a big hit, you know.
Penn Cove and Coast, they buy a lot, but it's very small amounts of the outboard motor kind of operations get across the bay.
Our last year, you'll notice on the four-year trend, in 2011, it was $707,000, then it went to $785,000. Dropped down to 730, and right now our yard revenues are at 841,000. So those are going back up. Our operating expenses, less depreciation, is at 1.999, which continues to increase. But again, halfway through the year, our total operating revenues are at 51.49% of projected. So we're in line with where I would expect 50% through the year. And the biggest increase there is coming in our salaries and benefits, contract services, legal fees, and then claims and damages. So right now we have a net loss from operations of $278,000 after depreciation, but once you bring in our non-operating income and expense, our net loss is at $14,400. So. And I have in the documents, I've changed as we discussed the last meeting, so we have our actual through this, through June of 13, then compared to our actual through June of 14, our overall annual budget, and comparing it to the overall budget and where we're at with any variances. I've tried to bring in reasons for some of the variances that were over or under 15% of where we projected. So you'll notice on the expense side, contract services.
Which page are we on?
I'm on page 21, I believe, is what is in.
Oh, okay.
A lot of that is from the boats that we had destroyed, as well as the tree removal. So those were some of the bigger contracts that came into play that were not anticipated, but. So I've tried to bring in some more of those variances. Do you guys have any other questions? I have in the individual statements, we've consolidated the yard. If you guys would like, I can also, in the consolidated statement where we list out all of the departments, consolidate the yard there as well, so it's consistent throughout the entire report. And that would probably be on page 21.
So when folks are looking at this, Amy, can you just note on your remarks section that this for variance is over 50%?
I can do that.
Just so people know.
You know, I wrote the four remarks.
Yeah.
And I didn't do all of them that were over under 15%. Some of them, the dollar amount is so small. It was, you know,
yeah.
I mean, when you're comparing a variance and your budget line is only $500, it.
Yeah.
So I really just tried to focus on the those that were bigger that had.
Under the bad debt, I noticed on my desk that Gene just put out two or three more letters.
Right.
We got several boats that are going to auction that we're going to be stuck with.
Yep.
For a month.
Yeah.
How many boats are we end up owning now?
We're getting a fleet.
See, enough there. This one was $5,000-some. The other was almost $3,000.
Mm-hmm. Are these all out of long term?
One was long term, the other one's in the regular yard. If you guys want a copy of those letters, we can just have, you know.
I've been getting copies.
Yeah, I've been getting copies. I was actually going to go look at it, but I never can figure out the hieroglyphics as to where they are in the yard.
Well, actually, also on our new website, Kevin's developing a page for auction boats coming up and then boats for sale that didn't sell at auction. So we'll have a picture and then we'll have a description too.
Oh, that's great. Then maybe we can entice some people to come buy these hulks, huh?
But, you know, if you want to do that, just stop by the yard office and Shannon will tell you where Y21 is, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, that the whole criteria behind auctioning boats and what's acceptable and what's not, as far as, I mean, that's a whole other issue that we need to look at some point. Right now, not really been able to sell any of them because of that. And then there's the issue of ending up with owning them again because you didn't sell them for enough. And so it's just this revolving thing that we're.
We usually require that the boat be removed from port property if it's sold. But that gets problematic when it's a large boat or it's in a condition where it really can't be moved. And you know, sometimes you're forced to you know, rely on the goodwill of whoever it is and hope that they're really, you know, going to restore it or whatever. But, we have to go through a very formal process that's laid out in the RCW as far as notifying the owner. There's certified letters that we have to send at certain periods before we take possession and announce it. And it's, the problem though.
Well, a good example is like the one I'm restoring right now. And, you know, I bought it for a dollar. And I wouldn't have taken that project on after I had to spend, you know, because it was, it's a big project and it's cost a lot of money to restore it. So, to compel, for somebody to be compelled to buy, like, that balloon out there, that great big balloon,
yeah.
That used to belong to John Wayne, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a restorable, it's a worthy project if somebody could come along, but if they're going to have to, you know, spend a bunch of money up front and nobody's going to take it on, and we're going to be stuck with something.
Hmm. It's well, maybe not far from Thompson's place.
Yeah.
Well, maybe what Sue just mentioned, that Kevin is doing with the website, you know, get the word out. The John Wayne used to own this boat, and maybe we can get some of those Steinbeck guys to come over here and change their allegiance.
I wouldn't get your hopes up too high.
That would be a really expensive one to dispose of.
Yeah, these are problematic boats, and it's worse for us than a lot of the other yards because we have the capability of hauling the bigger boats. And you go over to Edmonds, and they're all 35-ton and below, and you know, they're stuck with boats too, but they're all 25 and 30-footers.
So my question is, could at some point consider doing maybe selling these boats for a dollar, but be willing to, requiring some sort of a derelict deposit fee, so that if the new owner walks away from it, at least we've got that covered.
Yeah.
And they can get their money back if they follow through with what they said they're going to do, and fix the thing and get it out of here.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, especially if they start paying us again for the lay days and all the rest. You know, we could certainly look at that.
Yeah, that would be good. Said we've got a fleet of them now.
Hey, come, yeah, we'll build up an inventory and then we'll go down and we'll be okay for 6, 7, 8 months and then it builds up again. Yes. But Steinbeck right now, he's paying us every month. He got his credit card.
Bertram.
I went through this financially. I had a few questions. I noticed as far as revenue goes, of course, that in the work yard, the 75 ton, there's more turnover in boats and less lay days. On the shipyard, it's actually flat from if you compare it to the previous years. So that the haul, and actually down from last year. So the haul out, a number of boats that are hauled out on the shipyard is down or steady, but the lay days are more. So that's created more revenue from that. And that's something to think about in the budgeting process for next year. Lay days are probably more important in the shipyard than revenue from the haul out from the ramp is flat. It's almost the same as last year, which may suggest a different a use factor. To me, the most glaring things were, of course, and this is always the confusing one, isn't it? The A&G allocation, because when you add it up, it comes to $138,000 more in 6 months than last year, $138,000. And I know there's been a difference in the reporting, but if you could break that down, that's $60,000 for illegal. It's more in the last 6 months than previous years, and $70,000 more in salaries for administration. I'm not sure, Amy, on that, we talked about that once, whether the increase in $70,000 for administration, is that just because of different reporting and it's really the same, or is actually you're spending more for salary benefits for administration?
Well, benefits continues to go up and everybody gets the cost of living. So there is slight cost of living increases in there as well as increase in any benefits.
Well, we're talking about $70,000.
Right.
In 6 months.
But it's also because of the change in how we are allocating those salaries. So
that
it's a combination of all of it.
But that would be reflected in less A&G, right, and more in the salary. I know it's very confusing for me. I'm sure it's for the commissioners.
All of the administration The entire administration is what is allocated out to A&G.
Yes.
So
that's $132,000 more.
And, right.
And if you look at the bar graph on page 24, you know, you'll see that when it comes to overhead, that you keep getting an increase in salary and benefits. I know some of that's cost of living, but if there's a big administration bump, then that's something the commission should probably look at. And also, maybe when one of the, and the legal is significant too, it's $60,000, so sometimes you have to cross that whether it's really worth pursuing some legal thing, whether it, it's better just to try and address it outside of that format, because that's a significant amount of money. If you added that all, 132 in 6 months, that's a big chunk of change that you're going to need for other things. 6 months.
Yeah.
You said the shipyard was down compared to last year?
The shipyard haul-out is about the same, Larry. If you look at the numbers of haul-out, but the days, lay days is higher.
Yeah.
So you're making the money in the lay days, but not the haul-out.
Right.
Whereas in the yard, it's the opposite. You have less lay days, but more turnover. And so, you know, when you're making pricing for next year, one can see this is where the money is, and this is where you might have reached a ceiling in certain factors.
And our lay days are very low.
In the work there?
In both yards.
So anyway, every little thing, $20,000, $30,000 here and all these, they do add up. And so trying to control your overhead is really important. I would urge the commission to focus on that.
Well, I think you'd be proud of us. In our last legal thing that we did, just exactly what you suggested, we ended up flashing ongoing legal fees to do a settlement, which is substantially less than the legal fees would have been at the outset. So
that's good.
We're aware of that.
But trying to keep it, I mean, not that we don't like to see Karen around, but I mean, we legal fees are eating up.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion on the financials? Oh, I'm sorry, Vigo?
A question and a concern. If you look on page 21, it shows that repair and maintenance through the current period is $87,918, and the annual budget is $275,000. If I recall the numbers correctly, last year in maintenance, the port spent about $175,000, and we had a $275,000 budget. For the current run rate, you're still going to be $100,000 under budget for maintenance. And Pete, based on your comments at the workshop, we know we've got lots of things to do, and I guess the question comes out of that is, does Larry Ossie have enough help to do all the work that needs to be done on these minor projects? So that's a question. Go to page 34.
So Vigo, just a thought on that too, to kind of just complete the circle. It seems like we're on the right track as far as Larry and Eric Shays having the discussion of, you know, what it is we're capitalizing, what it is operating.
And I think that's outstanding.
Yeah.
I really do.
But I think you bring up a good point. We talked about it when we walked around Point Hudson. You know, the staffing level itself, you know, especially when you get into certain parts of the year where maintenance personnel are consumed by certain activities. You know, April, May, and June, we virtually have somebody at the airport every single day just cutting the grass.
Right.
You know, so that person now is not available to fix stuff. You know, the issue becomes in trying to, and Larry Ozzie's got to be the one to, you know, tell us this. You know, if we give them additional personnel, can we keep them gainfully employed year round? again, because certain maintenance items can only be done at certain times of the year. So, but I think that's something we need to look at, not just some maintenance, but perhaps some more as well.
Good.
Well, can't we hire summer help for some of that stuff, like lawn mowing? You know, that seems like it'd be a good summer help type job.
Yes and no. It's just that it hasn't been very successful in the past. You end up spending more time managing the part-time person than if you just brought somebody on. So.
And you had another one?
Yeah, the other question, if you turn to page 34, and obviously it's because I probably don't understand how the accounting works. Page 34 says port maintenance. And there you show the current period of $95,257. With an annual budget of 165.7, how does that relate to the number on page 21?
It really doesn't. The maintenance there is the overall maintenance. So whatever the guys are charging off to actually the maintenance shop. So the repair and maintenance line, it's very confusing. But this is overall, so all of these lines within here, so salaries and wages is actually showing up in the salaries and wages, the top line. So they go back and forth, but it's not a direct relation.
Why isn't it? Why are we making it so confusing for a second?
Because that's what I walked into, and I haven't changed that part of it yet. It's how it's been set up in the past. So, but it is not a direct correlation to the repair and maintenance line item over here.
From a management tool, and no offense, because I realize you stepped into it, but then it's not a useful document. It doesn't give the commissioners enough information to know where are we at, how are the expenses. There's one line you show 87, almost 88,000, here you show 95, so.
Right, this is just the maintenance shop. So the maintenance here on page 34 is the maintenance shop.
Yeah. Well, I for
so
one
not
would,
repair and maintenance.
I would really appreciate being able to look at this information and have the maintenance on one separate document and not spread throughout several different documents that encompasses the entire maintenance program. That's what I would hope to see someday.
And not have it broke out, so if they're working on maintenance projects within Point Hudson, you don't want to see that within Point Hudson?
Well, if you want to spread it out through the three different major facilities, that's fine, but having it written in this format here is confusing, just as Spiegel said, you read it in this, unless you really have a familiar understanding of what you're looking at here, it's pretty difficult for somebody to pick up and understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easiest way is the maintenance on page 34 is the shop.
I understand.
So that's, and then everybody has charged off the repair and maintenance to the various facilities to those facilities, so we know what we're doing.
Well,
with
in the meantime, if you could just, like we're talking about with variance, just add those words you just said.
I can do that. Maintenance shop.
So can I get a clarification? Because now I'm confused. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that the repair and maintenance on 21, those numbers are not related at all to these numbers on 34? Is the numbers on 21 part of 34?
34 is spread throughout all of the numbers on page 21 because 34 is, and I will add that, it's 34 is the maintenance shop. So it's when they're working on,
So the maintenance shop, my understanding is just Larry Ozzie will code if he's having to buy materials or whatever that they use in their maintenance shop in that compound down there, that he codes those things towards these numbers here on page 34, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
They do all the vehicle maintenance down there, so all the grease and oil and tools.
None of that's reflected in the number on 21, right?
Just the repair and maintenance of $1,400 on page 34, that's the only thing that would be coming into the repair and maintenance on page 21.
Just the repair and maintenance of what?
On page 34,
right.
Repair and maintenance of $1,400.
Oh, I see.
That's the only thing that's going to be coming into the repair and maintenance, the $87,000 on page, on the prior.
Can you give me an example of what we're talking about?
In that $1,400?
Yeah.
What $1,400? Oh.
On page 34.
And it's 1412.
Yeah.
$1,412. Mm-hmm. It would be if they repair a mower and code that to repair and maintenance. That's showing up in that $1,412.
Okay.
It's anything related to the shop.
I had it also circled on page 25 because, I mean, this is what this document helps you to make policy decisions. Repair and maintenance down at the bottom. Last year we spent $29,800, and this year you spent $7,233, where you budgeted for $80,000. And Amy put fewer repair projects next to it. And I guess the question is, does that mean you've walked the docks and you know that CD does, that these docks do need repair. Is that a policy change that you budgeted $80,000 and decided not to do that and didn't do any repair? That's what it would imply from that.
I think it's that the maintenance staff hasn't gotten to that area yet. I mean, you know, 6 months through the year. So it's... it's just in the staffing and where they've spent that time so far.
I understand that. So does maintenance have a plan to do things to for $73,000 worth of work in the rest of the year? Have they got a plan for that?
Well, the commission just approved the painting job for $18,000. We have a $17,000 roof job in Sunrise Coffee. There's almost $40,000 that are coming before the commissioners, you know, now. So, yeah, I mean, these projects aren't linear. You know, sometimes it takes permitting, engineering. It takes, we may not do a lot of this stuff in December. So we don't, that's not aggregated over the year and spread out. It can't be. Projects don't work.
Well, but this is Boat Haven. We're looking at this page here, not the boat yard or, you know, Point Hudson properties or whatever. That's completely a separate page.
Okay, that
so that money that we approved, you know, is not part of the $73,000 for Boat Haven Mortgage.
Right. So is that a decision that we're not going to do $73,000 worth of work on the dock issue?
It's not money that we made.
That's a Larry Ozzie thing.
Yeah. I can't answer everything.
But since you brought it up, and since it's not a decision we made here in this business meeting, and since Larry Isaac isn't here, we can find out.
Good.
But again, you know, we're putting together, as part of the budget process, facility by facility, all those things that after the walkthrough, given Larry's experience and knowledge of the history of these facilities, what he thinks are the priorities. We're running them all through the matrix.
Yeah.
And we'll be presenting all that.
Looking forward to seeing that process move through. In the meantime, let's get this question answered from Mr. Ozzie.
I respect the process. I'm just pointing out that the budget is a very useful tool for seeing what direction the port is going with these kind of questions, and that's why.
Right now, that's a valid question. It needs to get answered.
Exactly.
And I'll talk to Larry personally.
I'll get a hold of Ozzie and we'll slide something and send it out.
Okay, any other comments on the financials? Good comments, thank you. Okay, we're going to move to item C, scale by boats, Elise.
So you have in your packet a lease for scale by boats. I see Mark is here hiding in the back. You can let Mark talk about his business. This is something we've talked about a few months ago, and that's the disposition of day boats. And as we know, Aaron has moved on to the co-op. And
He has his metal building that's sitting in the yard, and he's looking to sell it. Mark is looking at buying this building. One of his caveats, I believe, and I don't want to speak for you, Mark, is that he'd like to leave it where it is. So we've done a lot of research with Al, and as far as the level three response, is this going to be in the way of that? And the answer is no, it's not. We move around that. In talking to Doug, is from an operations point, Doug believes that it's in a good spot for a couple of reasons. One is it's out of the way. Two is it blocks one of the other entrances to the yard for vehicular traffic. So that's actually a positive thing. So staff has no problem with leaving the building where it's at. This is purely a commission decision, policy decision. If you want to relocate or reorganize that end of the yard, Mark is asking for 4 years, 2 years with a two-year option. You would purchase the building. You would have a land lease with us at 3,000 feet. Staff would recommend approval of that, but I'd like to give Mark an opportunity to talk.
Sure. Speech.
Well, I've been working in and around that shop for a year and a half now. And then Aaron's decision to move in at the co-op.
You speak up a little bit for us old guys?
And Aaron's decision to move into the co-op, made this possible. And I've been working in the boatyard for 30 plus years on and off. And actually worked in that building, and Pete Langley owned it back in 91 or 92. Alaska. So my intention is to continue as a shipwright operation for me, and it's in the packet in there for the possibility of bringing in a partner at some point. I also talked to Al about that. He pretty much reassured me that it doesn't have to go anywhere. I think it's a great location. It's a great location for me. Due to, I worked with the shipwrights co-op also in a big boat yard on big scows and stuff like that. So it's a great location for me. I wouldn't want to get jam-packed down this end for everybody else. I think it's good to spread out the retail or the lease spaces. So.
And actually, I didn't realize, but Doug brought up another benefit of leaving it where it is.
Right, yeah.
In the old days, where you got the county center right there for the waste oil and everything, there's a gate. Well, it used to be, before that building got moved there, people would come screaming through there in their cars in that gate and go right through the workyard. And because of that building, that gate is closed. You can't, even if the gate wasn't there, you can't get a car through there because of the building. So it has that extra benefit. Forces are going to come in through the yard.
Since the port is bottled, and we got that from the city, that street isn't a necessity.
Yeah. It's
just part of the drainage. So.
Do you get along with Dan and Lisa all right, Mark?
Yeah. As far as I know. It's been nice to me so far. So
staff would recommend approval if the commission so desires today.
Well, did that have any problem? I remember the building right in that roof, or that...
This isn't the rub building.
Right, but I remember that the rub building or that satellite shelter next to it that has that boat in it had to be moved for the... This doesn't have to move for any sand filter stuff or... perfectly good.
Yeah. The one you're talking about has to move because it's right on the sand.
On the other side.
Yeah. It's right adjacent to his building, right?
His building would be about 10 feet away from that actual...
So it's not going to affect that at all?
No. Now, one of the caveats to this is... Aaron has basically a bigger lease area because Aaron also owns the satellite shelter that's kind of at the other end of this metal building. There's a long-term project in there, probably till March or April. Aaron would like to keep that on his lease. So what we would propose is just kind of split Aaron's lease down the middle, allow him to keep his satellite shelter with the long-term project. He would actually like us, and I think I would like to talk about us buying that satellite shelter to offer boaters covered space in the winter at some point, but that's down the road a ways. So all we're talking about is the footprint of the metal building for Mark.
So that was my question, Mark. What about that satellite shelter? I mean, do you have any designs on it down the road? Or?
No, not at all.
Really?
I don't want that big of footprint. I don't want that big of capital outlay. It's a great place, and I do
charge a little bit more and have a nice paint job.
A little far apart on the price, though. I went down and inspected it the other way.
Well, we started quite far apart a few months ago, too.
Cool. Okay, so I assume then that this lease is not just an assumption of Aaron's lease. That was a, okay, so this is a whole new lease. And so since this lease is a whole brand new lease, then what about the existing lease that includes the whole thing? Is
we're going to amend that just to include the satellite shelters.
Aaron's still got a year left on his overall lease, so we'll just amend that lease to the new footprint for Aaron.
Do we need to do that here? In other words, we're approving a lease now that's already got a lease, an underlying lease on top of it, so.
Yeah, we should bring that amendment back to you at the next meeting to modify it, but not extend the lease, just to decrease the space that he leases.
Well, Mark, where are you in the transaction? Are you, is this something you want to do by September 1, or can you wait a couple more weeks, or what's your schedule?
I'm kind of open. I like to get it all wrapped up myself. It's been kind of dragging on for a couple months, and not for anybody's fault. This is how it's coming about. I was kind of anxious to have it. In the process of moving out, moving into the core office. Shake his tail along a little bit there.
I think we get a letter from Aaron to terminate a portion of his lease that his building's on, get that to you all with the concurrence of this lease, and have them happen the same day, maybe September 1 is a good day to do the transfer.
Okay, so in other words, then, instead of acting on this lease today, we'll wait until we get that other paperwork done and then act on it next meeting.
We could do that. One of the caveats that I know Mark and Aaron are in the middle of negotiations, and Mark doesn't want to write Aaron a check unless he knows he has a lease. So we're kind of putting that process on hold, which we knew going into this that could happen.
Well, I don't have any problems with it as long as we get all the other ducks in a row. Does anyone else see any problems?
I see a problem, but from what Mark's indicating here, if we don't approve it today, it's going to hold up his end of it for some time, and he's hoping to see this resolved
now.
Not a
big deal, but...
I'm sorry, what?
Not in a big deal. It seems like you might want to get this thing modified with Aaron first.
Yeah.
For your benefit.
Yeah.
I think that makes more sense.
That's not a huge thing.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up.
27th is the day, the next day we have, right. So we can finalize.
So let's make all the documents match, date-wise.
Yeah, that seems like a better thing for you guys.
Yeah. Good. Okay, great. Thank you,
Mark.
Okay, so now there's no other agenda items, so we'll go to staff comments. Amy?
I don't have
anything. Carol?
Just an update, I wanted to let you know that, and I don't know if it was coincidentally timed, I'm just teasing, but Tim Harris is going to be moving to the Seattle Utilities Department.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So he's trying.
Were you paying him enough? No.
I think he was just so sad to see the lawsuit go away.
Oh.
No, so I wanted to let you know that we'll be looking for folks to hire. So.
Okay. Is there a big party for him?
There's a party. Right.
He was a good asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We wish him well. That's all.
Sue?
Nothing.
Sue? Just two things. Friday is the technical advisory committee of the RPTO, I think. Do you want to do a planning comment?
Yeah.
And then maintenance, they're doing a lot of work down at Quilsey, and I'm going to get down maybe tomorrow and inspect it. We've been replacing a lot of whalers and everything, and Travis has done a lot of work down there, so should be greatly improved. That's all I got.
Okay, public comments. Any more public comments? Okie dokies. Commissioner comments.
I had a meeting, I was talking with staff earlier today. Coast is a little concerned. The Hood Canal Salmon Enhancement, what are they, a nonprofit?
Yeah, they're nonprofit.
Right. They are currently digging a big monster hole south of the Big Quill to create a new salt marsh for salmon. It's actually going to change the whole course of the Quill as it goes ends there. The dikes are probably going to leave, and a lot of that area is going to be inundated. So it's going to really change the sediment all along the west side across the, you know, kind of the face of Daybob there, or the face of close to the two coast. So their concern, their pickup lines are going to have to be moved farther out of the bay in order to keep them in good water.
Yes, it's an amazing amount of sediment that's generated.
Right.
And this, there's some history to this. Probably about 7 years ago, give or take, they started moving all the dikes on the Big Dam Little Quill. They got quite a bit of money from the state to do this. And at that time, the port partnered with Coast Seafood to help put in a filtration system, because the big fear was the sediment. And also the change in temperature of the water. You know, the faster the water comes down out of the mountains, the colder the temperature is out of the bay, which normally is not a problem for oysters, but definitely the sediment is an issue. So this has been ongoing. I don't know how these people keep getting funded, but you know, everybody cries that our schools don't have money, but these guys get millions of dollars every year to keep plowing ahead with this plan to return it to 1850. I think that was the date. They actually had maps showing, you know, resettlement that they're trying to achieve. So,
yeah. So anyway, it's happening. They're digging. They're moving dirt to the Peterson property. And a lot of dirt, maybe. Hundreds and hundreds of yards. That's it.
Any comments?
I have a question regarding, a while back we talked about some temporary repairs on the Point Hudson jetty at the outer end, maybe repairing some of the lacing and some of that in our discussions. Is there, where are we on that as far as, because we're obviously years out, and considering what the engineer said, are we going to consider doing some temporary repairs?
Well, we can ask Shane, our engineer from Coast and Harbor, but right now there isn't any plan to do that. We are going to cordon off that outer section. Gave Larry Oz the instructions yesterday to put a hard barrier across, because we don't want anybody out there doing the Wooden Boat Festival. And yeah, we can make that assessment. I just don't know how much value it will really be. You know, we can get the engineer to give us their thoughts.
We're going to cordon off the walkway?
Just the outer the job, you know, where it goes out and it makes that angle. So that last 200 feet out there.
Not safe anymore?
I, in my opinion, I don't think it's safe.
Especially when you have 500 people out there at the Wooden Boat Festival.
You know, it's safe enough for a dozen people to be out there, but, you know, that sailed by on Sunday afternoon at the festival. There's just hundreds and hundreds of people out there and going back and forth from one side to the other and everything else. But, you know, that could be a very expensive project. You know, we need to make sure we get our money's worth if we want to go ahead with that. We wouldn't be able to, our staff wouldn't be able to do it, I don't think. So we'd have to contract it out.
Well, I guess maybe get some clarification on what, you know, to what degree of temporary repairs. I mean, from my recollection, just replacing some of the lacing would maybe buy us a little bit of insurance against winter storms, especially at the outer end, at the very, you know, at the, all the way up to where it really gets hammered.
Was that a recommendation in his PowerPoint thing?
He actually said that it could cause some more damage by actually lacing it. We'll get a better read from him, telling him that there's some time.
Well, what he mentioned was that installing lacing and applying and tensioning the lacing inappropriately could end up causing more damage because of the fragile conditions of the piling. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at is there's a lot of piling that don't have any lacing at all, and they're just flopping in the wave action and whatnot. That's what I'm coming from. hopefully securing those.
Just dampening them down.
Yeah. Thank you.
And let's see, I went to a commission or a conference in Skamania, which was an interesting one. There's a lot of, I always get a lot of really good valuable information from these things, and a lot of the stuff doesn't become really pertinent until you think, oh yeah, this issue's coming up and I heard about this over there. I made a lot of good contacts with other commissioners that are doing, I mean commissions that are doing wonderful things, and just added to my arsenal of things to think about next time we have a naughty question.
If I had one alibi, as you would say in the Army, so when you're in the rifle range and you finally get one more bullet that you need to fire off. Got contact by WPPA this week. Bill Bryant, he's a commissioner at the Port of Seattle. He's got himself on the board of the Puget Sound Partnership. And he would like to come visit us and learn more about derelict vessels and stormwater issues so that he can better represent port districts on the partnership. He's visiting a couple of the ports around Puget Sound as well, trying to get educated. So they asked me for some dates. One of the dates might be the 27th, which is our next meeting, which is an evening meeting. And you might, if one of you is available, I don't have the time yet, you know, it might not be bad to just come by and meet and greet and sit in on the, it might be like an hour-long session.
Well, there's nothing wrong with more of us showing up, right?
I just, they would have to announce it.
Yeah, so, I think that'd be useful, because Bill's a pretty smart guy. And
yeah, he just got reelected, so he's going to be there 6 years. And the other date is October 13th, if this date doesn't work out. So I'll send you an email and let you know if they firm it up.
Okay, so if there's no more comments, we're going to
adjourn into executive session.
Recess.